For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
Thank you, Richard Cotton. There is a sexual war being waged against white people. There is an effort to break the instinctive and cultural bonds that bind white men and white women together as mates, as husband and wife, and as parents and leaders of healthy families. This war cuts to the very root of our survival, and if we lose, we will perish from the earth. In the process of exploring this sexual war being waged against our race, I will be forced to describe things which are revolting and disgusting. I will be forced to use language inappropriate for children. So if there are any children within earshot of your speakers, please ask them to leave, use earphones, or turn off your receiver. In ancient Peru lived a tribe of Indians, not far from the famous and mysterious lines of Nazca. We know them only by their paintings, which display a high degree of skill. The current inhabitants of the area have no knowledge of the people who made the paintings, who have apparently disappeared without trace. What little we know about these people, we glean from the paintings they created. And what paintings they are, filled from top to bottom and margin to margin with depictions of sexual activity. They show themselves engaging in almost every conceivable type of sexual congress, sometimes even in groups. What is really remarkable about these paintings is not that they are so obsessed with sexual intercourse, but the fact that they do not portray one particular kind of sexual intercourse. They do not portray normal sexual intercourse between a man and a woman. They do not portray the kind of sexual intercourse which leads to the conception of children. And the creators of these paintings are now utterly extinct. Draw your own conclusions. The perverts do not have to recruit everyone in the country to achieve a similar result, of course. Our race, both in America and in its home countries in Europe, is already failing to reproduce itself, and its actual numbers are falling, while alien immigrants with higher birth rates stream across our borders and fill our maternity wards. Those who recruit for homosexual sodomy are a factor in pushing us ever closer to the edge of racial suicide. Every recruit for them is how many white children never born. I am aware of the objections that some may raise in light of the evidence that homosexuality can be genetic in origin. I agree that some defective individuals may carry a gene or genes that predispose them toward a perversion of the sexual instincts. And I further admit that it would be a good thing if such genes were not carried forward to future generations. And therefore, I agree that to the extent that toleration of homosexual behavior may prevent such pitiable creatures from conceiving children, it may have a eugenic effect. But I also believe that the factors that control sexual behavior are not absolutely bipolar. Some men are more masculine than other men, who are more masculine than others still, until you reach men who seem effeminate in many ways, but who are still definitely heterosexual in their proclivities and relations with women. Below that level, you may reach some men that seem asexual, and below that are the truly defective types that form the foundation of the homosexual group. But sexuality, particularly male sexuality, is a very powerful drive that demands satisfaction. If a teenage male, perhaps not the most masculine, and perhaps a bit afraid of women at his age, but who in ordinary circumstances would lead a healthy sex life and contribute good children to the race, is approached at an impressionable age and convinced to try homosexual perversions, and if this constitutes his first sexual experience, he may be pushed over the edge and identify himself with the sodomites, and become habituated to the practice of sodomy to satisfy his sexual needs. It is not by coincidence that the perverts have always concentrated their recruiting on teenagers, as even a cursory glance at the increasingly open homosexual literature will prove to you. Oxford and Cambridge universities, for example, are infamous for the indoctrination and recruitment of queers and communists, which more often than not go together. This recruitment is often elaborated beyond perverted intercourse to include the idea that the young man is joining a secret fraternity of the very best people who are changing the world for the better by destroying traditional Western values, an argument which sadly does hold some appeal for idealistic young men, sick to death with modern society and ready for a glorious revolutionary alternative. What they get is anal sodomy, death by infectious diseases, and an anti-life philosophy that perverts almost every aspect of their thinking and makes them into enemies of the race and culture which gave them birth. It is really very, very sad. When homosexuality was strongly disapproved of, its recruiting activities and its anti-life, anti-culture had little or no chance to develop, and the victims of the genetic defect were often objects of pity and sympathy, and were even sometimes honorable participants in the culture of the West. The defect was kept secret as much as possible, and only in the most depraved examples of the breed, like the famous exemplar of the French Revolution, the Marquis de Sade, was the defect elevated to the level of a virtue. A professor acquaintance of mine opines that it is almost impossible to succeed in the weird world of modern art today unless you are a Jew or a homosexual. In the giant bi-coastal con game that the art world has become, these two categories often overlap. We all know what they have done to our art. Splotches, daubs, and unrecognizable scrawls are far from the worst of it. Ugliness and the desecration of all that is noble and beautiful is far from the worst of it. What I am about to tell you is probably not even the worst of it. If there are any children present, you had better ask them to leave the room or turn off your radio now. The level of newspaper writing reaches new lows of vulgarity every year, and when I quote from articles on this program, as I am about to do, I am going to use the word excrement in place of other words which are now apparently permitted in general circulation publications and which I have edited out. The British newspaper New Statesman and Society waxed eloquent recently over an art exhibition at the South London Gallery by a pair of arty perverts who call themselves Gilbert and George. The article is titled Fecal Fulminations, Gilbert and George's Naked Excrement Pictures. I quote, "Representations of human feces and the male nude are the most noteworthy features of collaborators Gilbert and George's current exhibition of paintings at the South London Gallery. The works have the capacity to astonish, but they are ultimately unsatisfying," close quote. Now there's real criticism for you. Thank you, New Statesman, for putting these culture destroyers in their place. They're unsatisfying. After bewailing the fact that some other critics can't handle this sweet couple's homoeroticism, the article continues, quote, Naked Excrement Pictures, their new work, is a collection of huge, jewel-colored photographs hung from floor to ceiling at the South London Gallery. The Victorian Civic Building is the perfect setting. This might be the chapel of a neo-Gothic church with stained glass windows by Burne Jones or William Morris. Except that the pictures are full of the artist's own huge and hand-colored giant excrement. Flying excrement, cruciform excrement, penile excrement, and Gilbert and George with their Y-fronts round their ankles, exposing their anuses. The catalog quotes the Bible, reminding us that we are no more than dust or excrement and came into the world naked. There is an implied humanitarianism. The artist lays his arm around the shoulders of the other human excrements or saves him like someone drowning at sea. In this work, Gilbert holds George like the dead body of Christ brought down from the cross. Elsewhere in excrement world, the artists gather at the foot of the cross, like the lamentors in a classical painting. Only this time, the cross is made of their own excrement. As Freud wrote, defecation affords the first occasion on which the child must decide between a narcissistic and an object-loving attitude. He either parts obediently with his feces, sacrifices them to his love, or else retains them for the purposes of autoerotic satisfaction. For Freud, the anal phase is arrested, pregenital. The excrement is synonymous with the penis, a means of procreation. Defecation becomes the child's most valuable gift to be given or withheld. Close quote. End of article excerpt. So there you have it. Gilbert and George conceal their real names and ethnicities, but their art says it all. Severed of all moorings in European culture, if they ever had any, and severed of all ties to the natural and healthy values that well up from the soul of European man, these perverts vend their obscene degradations of our bodies and our instincts to the accolades, or at most the amused boredom, of the current cultural establishment. This should, but apparently does not, cause all reasonable men and women to think very long and hard about the exact nature of that current establishment. Let me add here that I have nothing at all against nudity in art. Art reproductions, including nudes, grace the walls of my home. The glorification of the idealized human form, which began in the classical civilization founded by our race, which was renewed when our race rediscovered itself in the Renaissance, and which continued until 1945, is an integral part of our culture and indeed of our nature. But to link the beauty of the human body with its waste products, to degrade both woman and man by portraying them as receptacles for unnatural acts, that is the product of the mentality of an alien race, Freud's race, or the product of a European mentality perverted beyond recognition by the anti-culture that surrounds homosexuality. And what of Freud's race, the Jews? Richard Grenier, himself of Jewish ancestry, looks at the Jewish influence on the theater in National Review. Quote, Jewish support of homosexual theater. Just who are the legions of theatergoers that have made homosexual theater commercially viable? Here we come to a curious recognition. Starting after World War II, Jewish playwrights have succeeded on Broadway in large numbers, and at the same time, Jews have come to dominate Broadway audiences. When I returned to America from Europe in 1977 and was required for professional reasons to see almost everything on Broadway, I was intrigued to find theater audiences that seemed overwhelmingly Jewish, a point perhaps more noticeable to the son of a Jewish mother. So, I found it not especially surprising that in a recent week of diligent theater going in New York at the more commercially successful homosexual works, I got the impression that the audiences were something like 10% homosexuals and 90% heterosexual Jews, to all appearances well-to-do, liberal husband and wife couples. We had some heterosexual Gentiles in the audience, no doubt, but they appeared to be a distinct minority. During a preview of Angels in America, when one of the characters uttered an expletive in Yiddish, the house positively roared with laughter. Many liberal Jews have fully accepted the parallel between discrimination based on race or religion and discrimination based on sexual orientation. This parallel is reflected in the AIDS plays. Indeed, it is more than reflected. To put it plainly, these plays are about Jews and Jewishness almost as much as they are about homosexuality. The play's authors are almost all Jewish. Angels in America is by Tony Kushner, Jeffrey by Paul Rudnick, and both music and lyrics to Falsettos are by William Finn. The Night Larry Kramer Kissed Me is by the only Gentile David Drake, but the title's Larry Kramer is Jewish and a real person, author of The Normal Heart and The Destiny of Me, two angry AIDS homosexual plays of 1985 and 1992, respectively. Barbara Streisand is currently planning a movie version of The Normal Heart. In all these plays, a homosexual, usually the Jewish protagonist's Gentile lover, dies of AIDS. This is the fixture of these homosexual works, novels as well as plays. The leading Jewish figures are homosexuals, and most of the leading homosexuals are Jews. The characters talk endlessly about Jews and homosexuality, homosexuality and Jews. The playwrights themselves find a correlation. Am I not to notice this? Close quote. End of article excerpts. Quite an amazing article from National Review magazine. The health effects of homosexual sodomy, which I have discussed in other programs, are destructive of our race. The antenatal effects of homosexual recruitment are destructive of our race. The demoralization, perversion, and confusion that result from homosexual culture distortion are destructive of our race. The creation of a moneyed and amoral class with great political influence but no responsibility to future generations is destructive of our race. There is no doubt that the promotion of homosexuality is a major front in the sexual war now being waged against white people. Of course, it is only one front in that sexual war, and the sexual war against us is just a theater in the total war being waged against the white race worldwide. As I record today's program, I notice that this week is the fifth anniversary of American Dissident Voices. I want to take just a brief moment to thank all of you who have written to us and supported us since 1991. Without your support, this worldwide radio outreach to our people would not exist. You have my profound gratitude. I thank each and every one of you for your faith and steadfast efforts. As we listen to this brief musical interlude, I want you to picture in your mind's eye a beautiful city on a hill, filled with lush greenery, titanic trees, and buildings and statues that look like nothing more than Greek temples, but somehow with an even greater grandeur. Walking the wide avenues are fair women, strong and handsome men, indescribably lovely children, all clear-eyed, self-assured, optimistic, and possessed of a serene intelligence, difficult to explain in words, but which can be seen in the work of our greatest artists. Every one of them, every single one of them, is white. As you gaze into their faces, you slowly come to the realization that these are our descendants. You begin to understand that we lived so that they might have life, and that the statues on that hill are of the heroes and heroines who made the new white world possible. The first step along the road to national renewal begins with you, dear listener. We have the educational tools to awaken you, your family, and your community to the dangers faced by white people today. But if we do nothing, then we will be swept aside by others who are more than willing to fill the vacuum created by our apathy. Take that first step today. You can fill in the gaps that the establishment has purposely left in your education by reading our outstanding book, The Best of Attack and National Vanguard, which we offer to you today as our radio offer number 4. This is no ordinary book. It incorporates all of the best articles from our patriotic newspaper from over a 12-year period. It is richly illustrated and contains information and research which has been deliberately suppressed by the controlled media, information which you cannot obtain from any other source. It is a huge 217-page, newspaper-sized book, and it is a book that can change America for the better. We will be sending this fine book to every listener who responds this week with a gift of $25 or more to keep this patriotic program on the air. Send as much as you think our efforts are worth, a minimum of $25, to National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Remember, when you write, please tell us the call letters of the radio station you are listening to now. And remember to ask for radio offer number 4. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom saying, speak out for our race and nation every day of your life.
You've been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for a book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute 2 international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.